Hello and welcome to Estates Gazette's first Yorkshire and North East Question Time. Over the last 12 months, we've zigzagged the country with these events, and it's great to be here in Leeds, a city with much to look forward to this year. From Trinity Leeds opening in March to the arena's unveiling in September, there's much to be optimistic about. And with take-up in the city centre recently reaching its highest total in 4 years, there's another encouraging sign. That's not to say that navigating the UK economy and its property markets in 2013 will be plain sailing, but it's true that some cities can afford to be a little more confident in their charts than others. To address these and other issues, and to answer your questions, I'm delighted we have a perfectly formed panel offering views from all sides of this industry. On my far left is Paul Fairhurst, head of the Leeds office of Savills, our sponsor this morning. The firm opened the Leeds office in 2004, though Paul has been practising in the city for more than 20 years. Martin Farrington is Director of City Development at Leeds City Council, with responsibility for the physical, economic and cultural services of the local authority. He's worked in local government for more than 20 years, and in that time has been involved in the development of the John Charles Centre for Sport, the sale of Leeds Bradford Airport, the development of the master plan for Elland Road, and most recently leading on the development of Leeds Arena. Gerald Jennings is Land Security's Retail Portfolio Director. He and his team are responsible for a portfolio valued in excess of £1 billion, including, of course, the £350 million Trinity Leeds scheme, the city's first million square feet regional shopping and leisure destination and the biggest shopping centre to open in Western Europe in 2013. Andrew Latchmore is chairman of the Leeds Property Forum, which provides sector input into the decisions around the growth and development of Leeds. By day, however, he is a partner at commercial law firm Shulman's LLP, specialising in commercial property development and public procurement law. And Roger Marsh is senior partner at the Leeds office of PricewaterhouseCoopers, as well as the deputy chairman of Leeds and Partners, the strategic body responsible for attracting inward investment, supporting trade, promoting tourism and raising the profile of the city. Now, I'm sure you'll all be familiar with the format this morning. Many thanks to those of you who pre-submitted questions. I'll be coming to you shortly to put those questions to our panel. I'm sure you're all poised. And should anyone want to respond to a point made, please put up your hand at any point, and I'll do my best to come to you. Comments, follow-up questions and challenges appropriately delivered are all welcome. And if you're tweeting this morning, use the hashtag LeedsQT. Right, let's get straight down to questions. And can I start with Simon Leonard, please? Simon, if you just wait for a microphone, it will be with you shortly.
Thank you. Is 2013 going to be lucky for Yorkshire's property industry?
Thank you, Paul. Is 2013 going to be lucky for the Yorkshire property industry?
I hope so. I think we've got a lot to look forward to, haven't we, this year? As you've no doubt heard many times over, we've got the Trinity Shopping Centre will be opening, won't it? That's great news for us. That's opening in the spring. The biggest shopping centre in Western Europe, I believe, opening this year. We've got the arena, 13,500-seat capacity. A world-class venue, which is a great attraction. We've got the Tour de France announcement. So we've got, there's a huge amount. The thing we've got to be doing is ensuring that the rest of the UK is fully aware of what great things are happening in Yorkshire. That's it, really.
Okay. Martin, will it be lucky?
I was commenting to Roger Marsh earlier this morning, actually, and I think you make your own luck. And I think it will be in that sense. Paul just mentioned all of the activity that's taking place in Leeds. I think from my perspective, and I am mindful that I have a unique vantage point in the city of most of the major developments coming through my door at some point in time and seeing the scale of propositions that are coming forward. And I do feel that whilst it's not across all areas and there are different levels of recovery, certainly it's more buoyant than it has been. I think Leeds, in terms of as a city and its confidence, is in a much better place now than it has been in recent years. And I think initiatives such as the Tour de France is just one example of our confidence. I know that when it was suggested to me that we went for that competition and we were competing with the likes of Venice and Barcelona, I did sort of go along for the ride, but did I really think we were going to win?
You cycle.
And as we moved forward, slowly and slowly, I sort of started to appreciate that we might just win, and started to have much more in-depth conversations with the Chief Highways Officer and the Chief Officer for Arts and Events, just to make sure that could we pull this off, should we succeed. But I think it is that kind of confidence and aspiration that has come forward in Leeds in recent years, and I think that's why we are making our own luck.
And the Yorkshire Post says this morning it will cost £3.6 million to stage, but bring in £100 million of benefits. Is there anything else that offers that sort of return out there?
I term that verity economics. I'm not sure what the economic impact is that does that 100 million, but I'm sure Gary's got it absolutely right. I certainly think that when you look at other international sporting events of that calibre and profile, it certainly is a very value for money proposition. If you take Glasgow as the Commonwealth Games, and the infrastructure that they're having to put in to secure that, the Tour de France is obviously a much more straightforward proposition to bring forward.
Okay, thank you. Gerald, you've been lucky so far. Trinity Leeds is almost fully let, not just luck.
Yeah, I'm sure. Thank you, Damon.
But will 2013 be lucky for the Yorkshire property industry?
I think Martin's absolutely right, actually. We make our own luck. We can't rely on others, I think, or a happy change of circumstances or a combination of circumstances to help us. So for me, how do we ensure that we create an environment where we can be lucky and take advantage of what's happening? Clearly with Trinity opening in March 13, for me in many respects, that's only the start of the hard work for us and for all the stakeholders in Leeds who can take advantage of what Trinity will do for the city centre. And I think, as previously mentioned by both Paul and Martin, there's such a lot that's happening that we need to take advantage of. And if we can do that, we can create a lucky environment. But I think there's a danger in just thinking that, yeah, it'll all sort of be okay and various people will sort of set the scene for us. So It's a danger in thinking, well, we've got Le Grand Depart coming in 2014 and the hard work for Gary and the team starts there. We've got Trinity and that's fine, those guys have done that. But there are still parts of the jigsaw that are yet to be put in place if we are going to create that environment, which will mean that Leeds and 2013 will be good for Leeds. And a couple of things, I think, for me, which will help us be in that position are things around the sense of place and the sense of arrival that we have in Leeds. And I think when people come to Leeds, and increasingly in 2013, I think people will come to Leeds for the first time, and they'll go away with an impression. And you only have one chance of making a good first impression. And for me, the railway station is not helpful in that respect. So if we are going to put ourselves in a position where people might turn around and say, yeah, Leeds 2013, it's been a good year, a lucky year for Leeds, it'll be because we've put some of those basic fundamentals in place and we've set ourselves up to be that sort of city.
Okay, thank you. Andrew?
I think I agree with the comment that you make your own luck. It's a bit like Gary Player, who, when asked whether he was struck lucky when he hit an absolutely phenomenal shot over a lake to land inches from a pea, said, well, you know, Jim, you're right, and the harder I practice, the more lucky I become. The Leeds property market has worked hard to contain itself and to keep fit. And I believe that Leeds' economy is just starting to realise that hopefully the world is not going to collapse with the euro and we'll still be here in 3 years' time. So businesses are beginning to say they must take new premises, they must make new decisions for their future. That's going to lead, in my hope and expectation, to not a spectacular but a slight and steady, hopeful, rise in demand, and that will help our economy. But there's another aspect to this, and that is that we, the property community in Leeds, we have all these good developments you've heard about. We need to get the message out, because investors need to know this is a good place to be, where things are going well and where they should be associated with. And too often, and it's been too tempting for people to go down to London and say, you know, it's bloody difficult to do a deal in Yorkshire, you can't get anyone to fund anything. But we've got some very, very good tales to tell, and we must go and tell them in the market, because attracting external investment's what's really going to make the difference. And I'm very pleased that on an international front, that Leeds is going to be playing a big part at NIPIM this year, and we'll probably hear more about that later today.
Thank you. Roger?
I guess a bit difficult to add to that, other than perhaps to endorse a number of things. I'm always reminded of the late business guru Peter Drucker's view, and he said in one of his pieces, the best way to predict the future is to make it. And I think that's largely what we're saying here. But you've got to make it in an environment where confidence is rising, or at least stable, rather than perhaps otherwise. And I think we've got that environment now in various parts of the economy, across the country as well as locally. But also there are other mixed messages that we have to deal with. You know, lack of funding, tenant appetite, etc., etc. But I do think there's a big untold story about not only Leeds, but Yorkshire generally on the international stage. And I guess it's for all of us to make that story and make a very convincing argument. An argument that, for me, is not about extolling the virtues of Leeds or Yorkshire alone. In other words, to answer the why question, but actually to create in the minds of those who might come here, particularly from overseas, more the question in their minds as to why not. Why shouldn't we be here? And I think that's part of changing the dynamic around the narrative. And things like the Tour de France will showcase to the world, not just to the rest of the UK, all the indigenous and other qualities there are here that we can make something of. So I think it'll be better, because business confidence will be better. As to whether you think it's lucky or unlucky, I guess depends on how you want to calibrate luck when it comes down to pounds and pennies.
Okay, plenty of issues spin out of that initial question. Let's move straight on to one of them. Amanda Oliver.
Is the need for speculative development going to return, or are refurbishments and pre-lets the only developments for the foreseeable future?
So, Andrew, take-up was at its highest for 4 years last year. Are we now reaching a stage where spec development is needed?
Well, we're definitely in a stage where speculative development is needed and would be helpful, because the office supply of good quality office space in Leeds is running out. But I'm afraid we're not going to see a lot of speculative development, if any, because the funding appetite is not there for it. But I do believe we will see more pre-let development go ahead, and maybe some of that pre-let development will have some speculative element piggybacking on it. It was interesting, many of you will know that the DCLG announced earlier this week that they're considering extending permitted development rights to enable people to switch office buildings to residential use without the need for an application for planning permission. And indeed, they've said they're bringing forward some new regulations to achieve that by spring 2013, so that must be imminent. I mean, that might help in a very small way in the residential market, and it might help move some old tired office buildings. It won't help meet the office requirements supply. But yes, we need it, but I'm afraid we're not going to see a lot of speculative development, in my view. It's going to be mainly pre-let.
This year, next year, beyond, or it may never return?
Oh, well, never's a... I never say never, but I think I certainly wouldn't bet my bottom dollar on seeing large-scale pre-let developments in the next 2 or 3 years, and I suspect some commentators have said it'll be a lot longer than that, but who knows?
Roger.
I think, whilst I wouldn't presume to be qualified like the rest of the panel to talk about spec development, I think the economic environment is one of this new norm, as Andrew Sentence says, of slowly getting ourselves out of the economic hole we're in. So I can't see it certainly in the next 5 or 10 years, but there's appetite from major occupiers for new places. I guess for them is the big question is deliverability. If I think of our own business, you think a long way out, but when you make your decision you want to do it, you want to do it. And I think it comes back to the funding point. The people you'll do it with is either they can do it because they've already got the funding in place, or they can do it with their own resources. Then the question is, does that match with the location that you want and the style of building, the message it gives relative to the brand that you are and the brand you want to be? So I think, for me, I think it's highly unlikely to be speculative as that we've seen in the past.
And from your own business perspective, is that something that you want to do, move offices, Sovereign Street?
Well, that's a very leading question. I couldn't presume to answer it. I mean, certainly we see ourselves very much as a player in Leeds. We've only been here 100 years, so I guess we think it's got some prospects still. Leeds is a key part of our regional business, and together with Hull and Sheffield, we will be investing continue to invest in space. There's a challenge between, on the one hand, keeping your operating costs the way they want to be, because you want to keep attracting and paying the best talent, but also, secondly, creating the right image about a brand like ours. And without sounding immodest or otherwise, as the world's biggest professional services firm, we've got to think about that. And we think about it in the context of whether it be Leeds, somewhere, west, north, south, or whether from here. We think about that and say, well, what's the right image and what's the right context? So we certainly will be looking at that very carefully, and we do have an appetite. How we'll satisfy that and when and where will remain to be seen.
Thank you. Paul?
I think it's clear that all the occupiers that I act for, they want to be in high-quality space, and therefore they're looking for new space, and certainly about 40% of them are. We all like new things, don't we? But unfortunately, not many think far enough ahead to be able to do pre-lets. Pre-lets that we've been talking about, KPMG must have taken 4 years to make their pre-let decisions for moving 2016. And most other people are taking the same amount of time, 3 or 4 years. But not many occupiers wake up and think far enough ahead. So, yes, there is definitely a place for speculative development. And as we see the supply drying up, as it is, in the best locations, and as we see demand picking up, as it inevitably will, we'll start seeing pockets of speculative development in the better locations. That said, developers have got a lot to get to grips with. They've gone through a time where the buildings have been void. Many of them have had voids for far longer than the development appraisals told them they'd have voids. And the rent-free incentives they've had to give away have been far too long. But that will change as time goes on. So we've just got to hope that they are able to find some speculative funding. Again, in the old days, they'd be putting in maybe 10, 20% of their money, and the rest of it was coming from the banks, wasn't it? Now, they're having to find sort of 40, 50%. It's a far bigger ask. So there's a lot more risk for the developers. And having been, have gone through some difficult times, they'll have to be absolutely sure that the occupier demand is there, and that the rents are there, and that they're not going to have to give up big incentives away. So we've got, sadly, some time to wait. How long that will be, I don't know. Being optimistic, 18 months.
Starting from when, though?
Okay, 18 months away then. John Reeves.
Thank you. Panel, I'd like to know where you think affordable finance will come from in the future, and when.
Gerald, where's the money going to come from?
I'm not sure I'm the best person to answer that, because we're in a quite a privileged position, I guess, from our point of view, Land Security's point of view, in that we have long-term finance facilities. And we've just refinanced back end of last year, and we have access to £1 billion that we can pull down on a rolling basis. So we're kind of okay, I guess. So I'm not quite sure I'm best placed to answer the question. Because,
Andrew, not all your members will be quite so well placed, I imagine.
Well, I mean, I think that you know, the question's an interesting one because it's not going to come from banks. Social housing is only going to work if either the government or local authorities can put either land or money into housing projects so that the builder can at least recover something, because it isn't fundable. And the more you put up social housing targets, the less housing overall you get. And I think it's quite clear that in the Leeds City region, there are a lot of towns who have quite high housing targets, and they're not going to be able to achieve those anywhere near if they try to impose too high an affordable housing requirement on them. It's a real challenge for the government, and I don't think the government or anyone else has any clear answers to it. But it isn't going to happen on the back of a huge growth in the housing private sector, because at the moment that is constrained by mortgage finance, and that's the key, it seems to me, the key factor which is controlling the speed of the delivery of private housing as distinct from affordable housing is the availability of mortgages and the sort of terms on which those mortgages are being offered. So I don't have an easy answer for you, I'm afraid.
And it's the same from a commercial point of view, because some of the banks now say that they didn't hit their lending targets last year because not enough people came forward who met their criteria.
Well, you'd have to ask them what those criteria were, wouldn't you? I mean, the banks have been absolutely clobbered by the requirements for capital adequacy and the slotting provisions, which have really, to a large extent, taken them out as long-term players in the commercial property funding market. So the commercial property funding market needs to look for other sources of finance, and I know that may be another question we'll come on to.
Okay, and Martin, is lack of finance a barrier to your regeneration ambitions? Are developers unable to access the money that would enable them to live up to your hopes and expectations?
Yeah, I mean, I think from my perspective, what I see are transactions coming through that have less involvement of the banks, more arrangements where they're joint ventures between developers where one has the proposition and the other has the equity, a greater presence of wealth funds, and then I think there's an increasing role in that market failure where the public sector plays a role, and I think probably the most local example of that was Bradford, if I can commend Bradford, it's not too late, on their involvement in the mezzanine finance to get the Provident building away, and that's led again to the proposition that Tony Rees, as the chief executive of Bradford, has been leading on for the development of a £400 million investment fund for the West Yorkshire authorities, and really trying to look at and picking up on what Andrew said, where the banks haven't met their targets. And my take on that is because the risk profile that developers have and the deal structures that they're looking for are more long-term lending arrangements than the banks are able to offer. And that's the market failure, where there's a role for the public sector to look and see if it can step in and provide, you know, under the Localism Act and the freedoms that gives, investment funding that helps to facilitate those developments coming forward, addressing the enabling works, the abnormals, etc., that can unlock those good development prospects and investment prospects in a way that balances the risk for the public sector, but provides the right incentive for the private sector to bring those developments forward. And I think that's certainly going to be quite an important element over the next 5 years.
So I imagine regional local authority chief executives sit down from time to time and have a coffee or a beer. Is Tom taking advice from Tony on how Leeds can play a role in facilitating some of
that? I'm sure Tom and Tony discuss it between themselves. Who's taking advice from who? It's not for me to comment.
Paul, where's the money going to come from?
I think on the pre-lets, we'll see the funds getting involved. I think the challenge is on the speculative development, where we'll see more of the sort of entrepreneurial investors getting on board. Some of these specialist lenders backed by the opportunity funds. As Martin says, we're seeing a lot more JVs, the local propcos tying in with the opportunity funds. I think a lot more people now, perhaps sat down south, who are getting fed up with the low returns and are maybe now starting to look towards the regions and towards Leeds for better yields and getting more with the money. So I think some will be coming out of the gilts and the bank deposits and perhaps thinking, you know, now is the time for property. And hopefully that'll be in Leeds and Yorkshire.
And Roger, Leeds and Partners, part of its role is to look at inward investment. There's huge sums of international money flowing into London. Is any of that finding its way here?
Certainly not enough of it at the moment. Just to step back from that, in 2012, about 3% by volume of the FDI projects came into Yorkshire and Humberside. I'll put another way, 20 times went into London and the South East. And one of the objectives of Leeds and Partners is to change that materially, but to change it around focused areas, not try and be all things to all men, and build on the strengths that the city has in the context of medical, biotech, in digital, amongst other things. But it's a long haul. It comes back to something I said earlier. I think the history has been of lots of places in the UK going out and saying we're better than anywhere else because blah, 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 and creating the minds of foreign investors, well, there may be some nice incentives for us to have, so who's got the best incentive package, and that's kind of where we'll go. I think we need to change that dynamic, as I said, to show why, for instance, in, say, the biotech, meditech arena, why actually some major corporations, they're clamouring to be here because that is part of what's happening. And some of the things we've talked about actually set the stage for that in terms of, you know, the huge investment in Trinity, the arena, Tour de France, etc. And we've got to be, say, confident in that. And I actually am confident that we can change those statistics from 20 times by volume goes into London, the South East, as compared to up here, but it's not going to be overnight. And we are, I'm optimistic about some game-changing investments in the next few years into this great place.
Can I just add something, Damien? I think part of the funding question and accessibility to finance and how people will then use that finance if it's available. I think what we all see in a number of different ways is what's happening in the property industry and the increasing gap, which I still think personally is growing, between prime property in various different sectors compared to secondary and tertiary. And that gap has got increasingly wider over the last couple of years, and I think it will continue to grow for a short while to come. And we also see that from our perspective when you look at cities, towns and cities up and down the UK, particularly in the retail property sector. Increasingly, there are a number of towns and cities that are well placed for the future, for the next 5, 10, 15 years. There's a whole raft of other towns and cities that aren't so well placed. And I think money and developers will go and be attracted to those prime locations and those prime sectors in those locations. And one has to be concerned, whatever the government might do or the banks might do in terms of releasing finance and forcing the banks perhaps to do that, that money will only go to those prime areas and those prime sectors. And that, I think that's a bigger underlying issue for UK PLC. How do we address that problem? Because it's not going to go away. And it might be a whole generation before we see a correction come through which will help some of those towns and cities. And I don't think UK PLC is doing enough about that whole issue.
If I may, I'd like to build on that point because I agree with you wholeheartedly, Geraldine. And I think it is a role of both central as well as local government not to whilst the problems are the same and they have similar characteristics, particularly social problems around the country, is to not be deluded that one size solution fits all, but actually to make a virtue of difference. And I think, if I may say, slightly politically, although not with any particular political persuasion, that I think the coalition is beginning to get the notion that actually you make a virtue of difference rather than try to create vanilla and to bring that alive. If the view is that to help the West Midlands and the North East beyond us would be some further extensions of the motor production in those places, how to create the environment where in the West Midlands BMW say, actually, rather than building one, two or three models for Europe, we're going to build five. How do you move on Nissan, what they've already done, to the next stage? So make a virtue of those differences, and for here, equally to find out what those things are that will help promote this economy advantageously, and then feed its way through into, obviously, part of it, which is the property sector in terms of the buildings and structures that are necessary to house those activities of the future.
Could I just add one small point? I did say that I thought the banks were very severely hampered in property lending and would be for a considerable time. I think there is some hope that the pension funds and insurance market will develop an appetite to invest in property more than they have in the past. And curiously, they are unencumbered by slotting and capital adequacy requirements like the banks. So although I have not seen any evidence yet of insurance companies rushing to buy investments in Leeds, I think it is our job as the property community to sell what we have to offer here. Yeah. And because we have a lot to offer, when those players start to develop an appetite, which I think they will, we need to be attracting them to invest here. And as Gerald says, I think Leeds will be one of those cities in the UK which can do well because it has a lot to offer.
Paul bravely called the return of the spec development market in 18 months. When do you think insurance companies? When do you think insurance companies might start feasting?
Oh, feasting! Golly, dream on!
Nibbling,
dream on! I've no idea, but I hope it'll happen.
Okay, we'll move on. Neil Terrett. We won't move on to Neil. I'll ask Neil's question of Martin, actually, because it's an interesting question. Given the regenerative impact that the land securities development of Trinity will have on the Bull Lane area of the city, what can Leeds City Council do to bring forward Hammerson's Eastgate development in Leeds?
No, good question. The Eastgate development, I think, is a very important one for the city. Certainly my wife always tells me in terms of John Lewis. I phrased it in the office as get John Lewis. I know it's more than that, but I think it is useful to focus people's minds. And I think it was quite clear in terms of a £650 million development in the context of the current market that Hammersons were going to come forward and bring it forward in a phased basis. The difficulty with that phasing was that the car parking was in phase two, and John Lewis, wanting to commit a significant amount of money to develop a store, wanted a car park in phase one. And the challenge was, how could that happen? And that was where we looked at the plan and the council decided, well, we will buy Milgarth. And that is what we did. So we've exchanged contracts on Milgarth. That's led to the development agreement being completed. That's led to the agreement for lease being completed between Hammerson and John Lewis. And it means that planning application will come forward during the course of this year to allow construction to start on site next year. And the other element that we have done is we have said that we will look at the connectivity between the Victoria Quarter, which Hammersons have now bought, and the connectivity across Vicar Lane to the Eastgate development, and we'll work on that with both Hammerson and John Lewis. So I think we've done what we needed to do to get those key elements in place so that development can start. And the other element that we're then looking at is the redevelopment of the parade on the George Street side of the market, and we've got propositions to bring that forward as well. So I think we've in a good place to make that into a very exciting part of the city.
And does that then complete the city's retail offer?
I think the other element I would highlight is the independent sector. to make sure that we have the whole offer for retail, and I'm sure Gerald will have a much more informed opinion on that than I will. But certainly the work we're doing at looking at Kirkgate Market, and I was delighted that we managed to secure Marks and Spencer's back into Kirkgate Market, where their Penny Bazaar started many, many years ago. And then also I think the other area we do need to look at is Kirkgate in terms of that independent sector and giving people that opportunity to get into mainstream retail, particularly in terms of fashion and textile around Whitecloth Hall, you know, one of the centres of commerce historically for Leeds, and try and develop those areas equally, as well as the work that Gerald's doing on Trinity and Hammerson's are doing in terms of their scheme.
And Gerald, does that sort of work help your offer, or would you rather see?
Well, I think what's hugely important for Leeds is that we have a John Lewis. There are only two cities, well, there are two cities in the UK that John Lewis have said that they are not in and they desperately want to be in. One is Leeds, one is Oxford. We're trying to deliver the solution in Oxford. Hammerson's are trying to deliver the solution in Leeds. I think it's hugely important that we have the John Lewis. I think Martin's points raised about connectivity is important for the future of the city centre as well. If we're not careful, and we have seen it in Leeds already, I think, that we have jewels in the crown, if you like. There are good developments of a varying nature throughout the city centre, but they're not well connected. Yeah. We're in one now. Royal Armouries came, I don't know how many years ago, but it's not well connected to the city. We haven't added that extra bit to make the city a whole piece. And so the work that Martin and the council is doing with Hammerson's and John Lewis to make sure that development on Eastgate connects with the city centre, I think is hugely important. And you think about the Kirkgate Market, you think about the Corn Exchange. We've all been into the Corn Exchange, wonderful building, but how many people actually go and shop in there? Not that many. So the added benefits that will come from having a John Lewis, I think are great. When it actually comes, well, the sooner the better, as far as we're concerned. There are other things that need to be sorted out there that make the bigger picture, I think, important, and we can't forget some of those issues, because in doing so we'll make a huge mistake and have a huge missed opportunity. And one, people are probably not aware of it, and it's not overly technical, and I won't get too technical about it, but it's traffic regulation orders in the city centre. At the moment, deliveries can take place up until about 10:30 in the morning, and then they're not allowed on the streets of Leeds until 4 p.m. We've been working very hard with Martin and his team to get those hours moved, and we've looked at what other cities do, and other cities of the same nature of Leeds have a 12-hour embargo in their city centres for deliveries. We still have White Van Man here at 10:30 in the morning and at 4:30. Now we're going to hopefully push that further into the evening, but unless we get those pieces together, having a John Lewis, great for the city, but it's not the final answer. And we make a mistake by thinking that we've got Trinity, we've got John Lewis, and that's it. It's completed. It's far from completed. There's lots of other work that we need to do.
Okay, thank you. Philip Clarkson.
The government is proposing to postpone the 2015 rating revaluation by 2 years. I'm interested to hear the panel's views as to whether they consider it has any implications for the local property market.
I know the panel is relishing this question. Roger?
I was about to say, I don't think I feel adequately qualified to make any comment, to be honest with you. I guess... and this is more, it is more of a guess that, you know, anything that perhaps ameliorates the lack of recovery or the lack of performance under the austerity plan, you've got to think about the kind of political connotations of it from my perspective. And I'd say others are more qualified, well, very qualified to comment on this. But I do have a concern that... And I think about my previous history in business recovery. If I explain to bankers about a problem child, and they've got a plan that's going to be a sales-led growth or, you know, recovery in the economy plan that will solve all the borrowing situations, and they say, "Okay, we'll back that, we'll give it a go," and then 2 years later, we go back and say, I'm sorry, it's not going to quite happen like that. It'll be another few years out. And most bankers would have said to me, we've had enough of that. Let's have a new plan. And so I say, I'm not making a political point, but I have some sympathy with others that say, is this plan really going to work? So I guess I set that context for others to talk about the technical detail of what that really means.
I think at a very simplistic level, it's hugely negative, not just for the local property market, but for the property market up and down the UK. I thought they'd actually said they were going to do it. I didn't believe it was still a proposal, which gives us hope, Philip, that we might change some. It'll go through, I think, is almost certainly. And I think it's a huge, huge mistake. Because I think we all know that we're currently dealing with a valuation list. We go back to 2008, and therefore the values that we have in the current rating list are taken from the good old days, which we'll never, ever see again. And values have come off, it depends where you are, but 20, 30%. So we needed that readjustment. It will affect the occupier's view. It will have an effect on rents, and therefore that will feed into capital values. And if you go back to the speculative discussion we had earlier on, it will make it much more difficult to get those developments through the viability stages. And I know we're doing one or two pieces at the moment where we're having to produce an appraisal based on the assumption that we're not going to have a revaluation, and it makes the appraisal look a bit sick. Because we can't get that adjustment through. Because we know by putting that value through, the rent that the potential occupier can afford to pay will be so much less, and therefore it shoots holes into the appraisal. So a huge mistake.
Martin, not in your control, but what's your view?
I can understand Gerald's viewpoint. I think the interesting element on business rates for me is the local government finance changes, where currently a city like Leeds collects all the business rates and then passes all of that to government, and it's cycled back to us through some very complex formula that I won't pretend to understand. But what that effectively means is that local authorities like Westminster generate far more business rates than they actually get back through that formula, and local authorities like Liverpool are net beneficiaries of that process. That's going to change, where local authorities will retain an element of the local business rate growth that they generate. And that is crucially important for a local authority, because there's in local government there's what's called the Barnett Graph of Doom. And what it shows is...
That's an official title.
It is. It's developed by Barnett. And what it shows is that the growth in pressures on adult social care and the growth in pressures on children services, coupled with the forecast reductions in local government funding, means that there is no money left for highways, planning, economic development, refuse collection, environmental services, etc. So that, in the context of that local government finance bill, creates a really interesting dynamic between someone like myself seeking to try and promote growth in a local economy and my director of finance trying to generate new revenues to prop up those services that are under strain. So I can see a very interesting dynamic coming forward about promoting growth that incentivizes the local authority to do that because of the element of the business rates that it will retain going forward.
But it seems to me that instead of the private sector having the increased wherewithal to encourage growth and development, that the ability the government is giving the public sector is that they have more of the funds. And I think the public sector are the wrong people to have more money to help us, in truth. I think that needs that rebalance, which this government I thought was had set out its stall about, which was rebalancing and asking and expecting the private sector to do more and the public sector to retrench a little bit. I think this piece of legislation will have the reverse effect. I honestly don't think the public sector are best placed to have additional funds, in truth. Some local authorities are better than others, but I think that direction of travel is not the right one, given where we are.
My point wouldn't be whether we are or we're not.
My point.
I was just being controversial.
That's the dynamic that the government are creating. That's the reality.
But I think the question we were asked was, is it a good or a bad thing?
Can I just make a comment there, Damien? I mean, as I understand it, in very, very broad terms, if we were to have the rating revaluation, places like the North and the Northeast, particularly badly hit, would have a significant or reasonable drop. Obviously, it's going to vary across the piece, but drop in their rates. Places like London probably won't. And so a rating revaluation would have the effect in some measure of reducing the gap between the Northeast and London. Now, if we are to sell Leeds successfully, we need to be able to sell it on the basis that it is not only a great place to work and live, but it's actually quite a cheap place to work and live. And, you know, it's quite encouraging that the Eurocom Fund Monitor says that, according to their statistics, Leeds is the cheapest city in the UK to live and work, and the third cheapest in Europe. Now, a rating revaluation would, I suspect, have helped us further with that. And those sort of statistics are really important if we are to drive this economy forwards successfully.
Might it also make you question a business decision to invest in a place where values measured by rates are falling?
I wouldn't have thought so. I think all they look at is the bottom line. What is the occupation cost of being in Leeds? And that's a combination of rents, rates and other factors.
But it's not about being cheap necessarily. I think it's about giving value.
Competitive advantage.
I agree with you wholeheartedly. I think, and not to pick at your words, Andrew, the consequence may be cheap, but the language should be about most attractive.
And value.
Okay, let's move on to a very big issue. They're all big issues, but Adam Sims.
Hello. What infrastructure projects could be launched to increase Leeds' competitiveness with Manchester in addition to HS2?
Paul.
Well, we hear about HS2, that's 20 years away, isn't it? So that's not going to help us a great deal. I think that for me, railway station. We need the railway station to be refurbished. We were trying not to mention the word this morning, but if you get to Manchester, you arrive at Manchester Piccadilly, and it's quite a pleasant station. If you arrive to Leeds front door, the railway station, it's just dreadful. So I can't fathom why it's taking so long for the powers that be to sort it out. We're all told that it can be almost self-financing having a new railway station, and that it will attract retailers and leisure, etc. So that has to be sorted out, and I believe that there are people higher up the chain who are trying to sort that out as quickly as we can. But again, that doesn't want to take us the next 10 years. We need to have a time frame that makes sure the railway station is a great front door within the next 5 years. We've got this trolley bus system coming in 2016, finishing off 2018 on current timescales. That will help. I mean, having nice new buses floating around the city, aiding congestion or improving congestion problems coming from the north and also from the south is a positive thing. If you go down to London and speak to the investors, they're very impressed by good public transport, and if we've got the greenest trolleybus system, it's just another feather in our cap, something to be shouting about. I think there's other discussions about electrifying the line to Manchester, so we spend 10 minutes less on the train. Myself, I'm not quite sure how beneficial it is to lose 10 minutes getting over to Manchester. Any improvement is a good improvement, and it will help people investing in the city.
Roger, are you more optimistic about the prospects for Crossrail, even though it's a little way away, and what else should accompany it?
I'm really reflecting on what Paul was saying about further investment in public transport. On one level, it is a good thing to do. but actually there's also changing mindsets for people to want to use it and actually take advantage of it, because, you know, like 40 years in Leeds, I think we still have a love affair with the car. A lot of people have a love affair with the car, and we've heard before about, you know, the whole Lewis thing, John Lewis thing, and the fact that they need the car park there first, and then they'll say let's go with it. So we have to strike the right balance. I don't think there's one simple answer, because, you know, travel to work and for social preferences are very different here than in the capital. So in a sense, I'd almost ask the question: is yes, it might be nice to have a few shiny buses around, but actually, will it? As Paul intimates, actually had more of a problem than provide a solution. And maybe we need to think about, actually, despite this is really anti-green, I don't mean to be anti-green, but actually this is what we really want to do, and the price to pay is more about road infrastructure than anything else. But I don't know, maybe I'm being a bit more provocative than I should be.
Gerald, you're a convert to the train.
Absolutely, but yeah.
Is that where the money should go into public transport?
I'm a huge fan of improving our train services and infrastructure, and I started using the train from my part of the world, which is just north of Bingley, about 18 months ago, and it takes 20 minutes. The service is regular, the rolling stock is fine, and the more I think that people understand that they don't need to jump in the car, they can come by train. But I understand, I've never been on the train to Harrogate, and I don't think many people do, because if you live in that part of the world, I think you are wedded to your BMW and your Mercedes. So you don't want to be seen with a great...
Especially off-road.
The great and washed in a crappy little carriage. And as we were saying earlier, so many people haven't learnt from their parents how to put their hands over the mouth when they're yawning. Anyway, that's another story. Yes.
Is that an advert for living in Bingley?
The August on at Shipley, actually. So I'm a huge fan of railways, actually. I think they improving the links across the Pennines, I think, is hugely important. So the Northern Hub piece of work, which is a precursor to HS2, I think is absolutely vital. And it's not about being 10 minutes quicker for us getting across the Pennines. What about 10 minutes or 20 minutes quicker for those people across the Pennines to come to West Yorkshire? So that connectivity works both ways. And HS2 is a really good example of that, because on Monday, when the whole media world was up here transmitting about HS2, the question I was asked, well, isn't this just going to make it easier if it's 1 hour, 22 minutes for people in Leeds and West Yorkshire to go down to London? Well, of course it will, but by the same token, it's going to make it easier for those people to come to Leeds. And go back to us being a lucky city, how do we take advantage of what's going to happen? And sure, it's 20 years away, but unless we start it now, we'll never have it. It'll be 30 years away. So for me, I think everyone needs to get behind HS2, everyone needs to get behind the Northern Hub, and everyone who lives in Harrogate should start lobbying for a better railway station, both in Harrogate, which is a bit of a crappy one, and Leeds, and get better rolling stock and use the train.
Andrew, the spontaneous round of applause.
I mean, I wholly agree. I mean, the station, I think, to connect the tram to the airport is a key objective, because the airport at the moment is stranded and we've got to connect to it. Transport infrastructure generally, and at the end of that list, then I think we need to continue to look at the open spaces in our city, to continue to promote the park theme, which John Thorpe's been promoting, and looking at the quality of the space. We talked about it earlier in connection with connecting up the space. Yeah. Leeds is fantastically lucky. It has a very compact centre. We're not talking about huge distances that need to be worked on, but it is really important that people should be able to move around the city through attractive, open, well-planned spaces, and that's something that we need to invest more in over the coming years.
And Martin, £250 million going into trolley buses, what else is up the list of priorities?
I would agree in terms of Paul and the station. And what we've done as a local authority is we've brought Network Rail to the table, we've brought the Chamber to the table, and the West Yorkshire Passenger Transport Executive, and that will lead to Network Rail presenting their proposals for the master plan for the station in the public domain over the next few weeks. And I think the HS2 announcement on Monday creates a really exciting proposition where those two taken together will make it the largest rail transport node in the north of England. And in terms of then Networks Rail's propositions that they've brought forward, it creates a compelling investment case as to why the government need to get behind that. Because in my world, what I see very often is just the length of time it takes this country to deliver large infrastructure projects. And it hit home to me most when I was presenting to a Secretary of State for Transport, and the Secretary of State said to me just how committed they were to this project. And 2 weeks later, they were reshuffled out. So you're sort of left with a position of, well, what does that conversation stand for? And the delivery over a number of years means there's probably 6 or 7 secretaries of state and 3 or 4 parliaments for some of these projects. And there was a study published by Professor Michael Parkinson of Liverpool University last year about second-tier cities. And what he demonstrated in Europe was that the more successful economies were where second-tier cities had the greatest degree of autonomy, so they could get on and deliver those larger projects. And that in the UK, we have the most regulated approach to the delivery of those projects of virtually any other country in Europe. And that's why we take so long to get on and deliver those kind of projects. And I think that's why I'm very supportive of the City Deal and the ability that creates to have £1 billion transport fund in West Yorkshire, where at a local level, the public sector working with the private sector in West Yorkshire can help to determine what those infrastructure projects are going forward.
Okay, thank you. And last, a very quick question from Jeff Peary.
It might be a quick question. I'm not sure it's a quick answer, actually, Damien. I'm taking from the panel this morning that there's quite a lot to be cautiously optimistic about, but real growth will only come from us being regarded as an international destination or an international city. Briefly, I suspect, how does the panel feel that we can elevate our international presence?
Martin, you'll be in the pitch. What would be your pitch?
My pitch? I'm not sure I do pitches. I think it's a combination of things, and it's about having confidence and Leeds having confidence. And I think the low point for me was around about 2005, when it was the City of Culture and who goes forward for the City of Culture. And Leeds, and I think it is a bit of a Yorkshireism, being quite reserved as a character, decided that we're okay, thanks, and we would let Bradford go forward and we wouldn't compete. But Liverpool did. Liverpool secured it. On the back of that, Liverpool secured an arena with a lot that was wholly public funded and their convention centre next door. And I think that is exactly the approach that Leeds shouldn't have. Leeds should have that confidence. It's bringing forward the arena. That means that there will be international events throughout the year that will put Leeds' name on the map. And I was delighted that when I looked at the listings the other week, that for the first time Leeds is listed alongside the other major cities in the UK for those tours. The Tour de France, the Rugby League World Cup, the Rugby Union World Cup, and being a player in that marketplace and having the confidence. Because when you look at the Cushman and Wakefield stats, Leeds went down the rankings last year. It actually stayed the same. But what happened was the cities in Eastern Europe are going up. And I think that's the marketplace that we're in, that we can't afford to stand still. So we've just got to have that confidence and keep moving forward.
Okay. Paul?
I suppose we've got the better connectivity now with the 4 flights today from Leeds Bradford to Heathrow. I suppose it's a question of where we jet off to and what do we tell people. I had an interesting meeting with Lorraine Joseph from Leeds and Partners the other week, and I think she got some very good ideas. Really, it's a question of, you know, a lot of us have been in Leeds for many, many years, but do we really know what we're great at? And the thought is that there's some fantastic hubs which are forming in Yorkshire. You know, we've got health and medical expertise in bucket loads. St James's, the largest teaching hospital in the UK. We evidently have got world-leading expertise in low-carbon sector, advising us on like 40% of low-carbon deals throughout the UK from Leeds. You know, digital technology sector is very strong. Some chap from the Airedale corridor was telling us that we're actually, you know, very close in terms of turnover, or turnover more in that sector than the Cambridge technology sector, which, you know, there's some quite good information out there, and I think that we haven't got our killer facts together on what is so great about the city. And I think the idea is that these killer facts are put down, we all understand what they are, and we're all in a far better position to go and sell our great city, where we all enjoy working and playing, shall we say. So, you know, we've got the great PR opportunity, the Tour de France, we've got the arena, we've got Trinity, you know, we can build on that with some key facts about the city and go out and sell it.
And Roger, just quickly, what are those key facts that Leeds and partners talk about?
there's a number.
If I just like headline
to,
ones.
I'd like to build on one in particular, the unique health ecosystem that is actually does exist here in Leeds, that I didn't realise existed. You know, the collaboration of all the parties that are actually in the health economy, it's actually quite unique, not only in the UK, not only in Europe, but actually anywhere in the world. And just to illustrate, I was with the chief executive of a major US biotech business, and they were quite surprised, and it was through a number of sort of serendipitous moments, events, where UKTI had said, well, have you thought about Leeds, because they're doing things, but without really knowing what we were doing. When they started to see what it was we're doing, they began to say, hang on a minute, we should be part of this. And I think it's about not so much killer facts, but a series of themes that distinguish Leeds and Yorkshire more broadly to those international corporations. And as I said before, and I repeat myself, to create in their minds an appetite to be here because of those things, as well as all the other great things around why it's great to live here, whether or not you travel by train or Mercedes, it doesn't matter, etc. But I think we need just a handful of them, and there's actually a branding proposition that's going to come out relatively shortly that tries to illustrate what these key themes are, and for us all, in an ambassadorial sense, promote these to the international markets.
And Andrew, what's the one thing you'd say to an international investor? Why Leeds, not Lille or Leipzig?
Well, I think it's a series of messages, Damien, and I think we're just beginning to elucidate those messages and bang them out more clearly, and I think Leeds and Partners has a big role to play helping us to do that. But certainly a very good mixed economy with some very strong specialist sectors, good sort of value for money as a good location, an excellent place to work, a very strong knowledge economy with 6 universities, 8 HECs, 36,000 graduates a year in the Leeds City region. And, you know, if you're an American that wants to come and start a business in Yorkshire, I think we sometimes forget, we think of ourselves as, you know, quite a long way from London. But to an American in the Midwest who wants to start a business in Europe, if he looks at the map and sees Leeds, he thinks of it as a suburb of London. He'd be just as happy to come up and set up in Yorkshire as set up in Surrey. And it's a message we forget. It isn't a difficult sell to some overseas businesses coming to Yorkshire. It's actually, to them, perfectly natural. It's a good place to live, a good place to find qualified and trained staff. And it has good connectivity with the city, which will get better. So I think there are some very strong messages there, and we've got to elucidate them more forcefully. And I'm very glad that Martin sort of said, you know, we have to have the confidence, but we also have to have the ambition and the belief in ourselves and not feel, you know, oh, well, I know we lag behind, because we don't. This is a better city to live and work in than most of our competitors.
And Gerald, attractively priced as well.
But not cheap.
Gerald, what persuaded Everyman Cinemas and Victoria's Secret to come to Leeds?
Apart from the money. well, I think it's not rocket science, really. They saw the opportunity to do good business in Leeds. I think the challenge for us was to get Leeds initially on their radar. But once it was on their radar, and we did have some killer facts that we were able to use, they saw the opportunity to do good business. And I think if you can show someone that they can make money, why wouldn't they? Going back to the question that Roger asked. A couple of things, if I could, just if I wouldn't underestimate the role that sport plays, and I think it's quite interesting where you see, which I do, I see where Leeds stands in the football league tables, and it's pitiful. And I just thought, if the council has a couple of million to buy a car park, can we have a couple of million to buy a decent player rather than have to sell the best player that Leeds currently have? So I'll leave that one. Leave that one with Martin. Perhaps if the rating revaluation doesn't take place, they'll have more money to help us do that. But having Tour de France, I think, is fantastic, and that gives us a great opportunity. Mippin, I think, is a huge opportunity. Loreen does have some really good contacts in London, and I think at Mippin, Boris will be standing alongside Leeds. And I wouldn't underestimate that sort of opportunity. London standing alongside Leeds, and London helping promote Leeds, I think it's those sort of things that will go a long way to get us on the international platform.
That was a perfect poker face when the suggestion to spend £2 million on a new striker was put forward, but I'm afraid that's all we've got time for. We're in Edinburgh next week for question time, so do tell our friends, colleagues and family. Thank you all for coming this morning. Thanks to our sponsors, Savills and Mills and Reeve, and thank you especially to our panellists. Thank you.